You see, most gamblers, when they go to gamble, they go to win. When we go to gamble, we go to lose. Even when we win, it's just a matter of time before we give it all back.
This is the Bet Slippin' Podcast,
featuring Jeff Clark and Eston McLaren from USA Today Sportsbook Wire.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
No way.
Join them on their journey as they grow from gambling writers to sports betting sharps.
I mean, it's the gambling business. Occasionally get punched in the face.
You're listening to the Bet Slippin' Podcast. Now, Jeff Clark and Eston McLaren.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
Yeah. Welcome back, sports gamblers, to the Sportsbook Wire's Bet Slippin' Podcast. We're sponsored by BetMGM. I'm a co-host here and handicapper at sportsbookwire.com, Jeff Clark, joined by my gambling consigliere, handicap, and hype man, and colleague, Eston McLaren. Eston, what's good, brother?
Hey, Jeff, doing well? I know you're well rested after the NBA All-Star weekend, and I just hope you're ready to get back killing it with your write-ups for Sportsbook Wire for the second half here.
Yeah, I needed the break. I've been kind of grinding here since the start of the NBA season. Haven't had an off day, since the start of the NBA season. So it was nice to get a bit of a break, but it wasn't that much of a break, you know, with opening day right around the corner, March Madness. Both topics we're going to talk about in future episodes. So I kind of use my off day to work and handicap and look ahead on those events and upcoming sports things to handicap. So, but yeah, I need a little bit of a break from the NBA. How are you doing over there? What's new in your sports betting world?
Took a beating at the Arnold Palmer Invitational last week. Talked a lot about that on this show last week, and oh boy, big regrets it didn't pay out. But you know, another tournament this week. That's a good thing about the PGA Tour schedule is it never slows down, and we're less than a month away from the Masters, and we've got Players Championship this week. We're gonna get into it, and it's the unofficial fifth major is the old overdone cliche, but hey, it's a big golf tournament either way, and it's a who's who in attendance this week. Can't wait.
Right, I feel pretty confident you're going to get it back here in the Players' Championship this week. We're going to talk a little bit about that later. I also have a few or a couple second-half NBA teams to fade or follow in each conference. I'm going to do my three NBA best bets for the week. I've been pretty hot in that, 6-1 in the past 3 weeks. And of course we're going to give you our best bets at the end of the podcast, but first let's start off in the gridiron. I know you have some NFL free agency notes and some observations you made about possible moves or acquisitions to save some cap money and whatnot. Kind of, why don't you talk about what you're burning on or what you're thinking about?
Yeah, so it's just kind of the next stage of looking ahead to the 2021 NFL season, right? So today, Tuesday, March 9th, was the deadline for franchise tags. There are 9 in total handed out. You can find those elsewhere. We're not here to do that for you. But, you know, the betting implications, obviously, stemming from it, we're now just a week away from free agency, a little bit less than when you're listening to this, probably. And that's when these lines are going to start to move a lot. They haven't moved much since the Super Bowl, since they were first released for Super Bowl 56. You know, we talked about J.J. Watt to the Cardinals. There's been no movement there. They're still plus 4,000. The Indianapolis Colts dropped a little bit, still plus 2,000 now. So they stayed there for a couple weeks. But heading into free agency, we could see some shakeups. And one way to get a read on what may or may not happen is to look at cap space. So these numbers all from SpotRack, a USA Today property. The New England Patriots, second most cap space, $72 million. They're plus 3,000 for the Super Bowl. And hey, obviously the biggest concern with the Patriots is they don't have a quarterback. No real solution coming in for that. No real great options in free agency, at least not to lead them to Super Bowl contention. So, probably not getting too excited with the Patriots, even with all that money. But the Colts, even with Carson Wentz, $50 million in cap space, plus 2,000. You know, if they make another one or two big moves, if they get Carson Wentz a receiver, you know, that 2,000 still has quite a bit of room to drop. Miami Dolphins, $35 million in space at plus 2,500. That's a team that almost won a division last year. You know, they're probably going to challenge the Buffalo Bills again this year. Maybe don't need to worry about the Patriots. Now they need a running game, perhaps, and they need a couple. They need to replace a couple pieces on defense. So I think they can do that with $35 million. And the Cleveland Browns, still $26 million in cap space. This team year over year has $26 million in cap space. I don't really know how. Not a capologist, but you know, I guess that's what bottoming out for almost a decade tends to do for you. $26 million cap space plus 2,500. By the odds for the Super Bowl, I like that. And the Baltimore Ravens, $26 million as well, and they're plus 1,200. So that number is probably not going to go down too much. But that's a team that could stand to improve, and another team that needs a wide receiver. There's some good wide receivers out there in free agency.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, it's a little early for my brain to, I guess, wrap its arms around the NFL gambling landscape for the 2021 season. I'm going to start looking at the NFL draft here soon. Are you blending in like any possible draft news or stuff into like your future futures portfolio?
Yeah, you obviously need to look at that. And you know, obviously the Miami Dolphins are probably the best poised here to get helped out a little bit by the draft as well as free agency. So yeah, that plus 2,500, you know, choose for yourself if you think that's a good value, but that can only go down for me between now and the season. I'm barring some sort of off-season training camp injury. You know, they can only stand to improve on paper.
All right, right on. Well, hey, thanks for the salary cap and the free agency report and intel. We also got to talk about the NHL futures. It's almost at the halfway mark here in the NHL season, and things are starting to come together. I know you had some thoughts about the NHL futures market. So why don't you kind of take it away there and talk about some ice hockey? What's going on?
Yeah, just a couple quick notes here. And yeah, this is a weird season. You know, as we just saw in the NBA, you know, all these COVID postponements, some teams have played half their games. A lot of teams haven't. A lot of teams aren't even close. So, you know, you got to weigh that here and, you know, look at the standings, look and see who has games to make up here and who could have a late season surge or who you know, could kind of fall apart here down the stretch. You know, one team we've talked about in this NHL futures report, you know, almost weekly on this show, the Edmonton Oilers, they were plus 1,400 by the odds last week. We didn't talk about them then, but they've fallen to plus 2,200. You know, and that checks out with what we talked about with them a few weeks ago anyway. You know, they went 7-3-0 over their last 10 games. They're up to 27 games played. So, yeah, they're right on that halfway point. But, you know, this is a team, they're not impressing much. And even though they went 7-3-0, the Toronto Maple Leafs went 7-3-0. So they dropped from plus 800 to plus 650. And, you know, they're just the much better team overall. And 7-3-0 there without Captain Austin Matthews and star goaltender Frederick Anderson for many of those games. So, yeah, they're a more impressive team than the Edmonton Oilers. Another team I've talked about a lot on this show that I really like this year, the Florida Panthers. They took a slight fall from plus 2,500 to plus 2,200. So losing a little bit of value there, and I think that's going to continue. They're seventh in Corsi 4 percentage, just playing great hockey around 5-3-2 in their last 10 games. 24 games played. They've had a couple of postponements, so they're going to have quite a few to make up down the stretch. And goaltender Sergei Bobrovsky is starting to look like the guy who won a Vezina Trophy. You know, long way to go to get back there, but you know, he's looking serviceable at least. And my number one pick for the Stanley Cup right now, Dallas Stars at plus 5,000. Well, number one by the value, sorry. So obviously there are better looking teams in NHL right now, but Stars plus 5,000. They've only played 20 games, while other teams, which I'd read here, have played 26, 27. There are teams with 28, 29 games played. So Dallas, long way to go here to finish the season. They went 2-6-2 in their last 10 games. They're still ninth in Corsi 4 percentage. And talking about all these games to make up, this is a team that's been without Tyler Seguin, Ben Bishop all season long. Alexander Radulov has been on the injured list for a while. All three of those guys are going to get back with still a lot of games to make up for Dallas. This is the reigning Western Conference team. They didn't lose anybody of importance, at least off the roster. All their problems so far this year have been injury-related. I think that gets solved with plenty of time to make up those games. And you know, this season's played out perfectly for Dallas, whereas not as well for other teams with these postponements and delays.
Is there any NHL awards that you still think have value in the futures market, or is there any like long shots that you're looking at?
Yeah, much more so in NHL futures awards betting. You know, obviously the NBA, the MVP is a four horse race every year. NHL, the value tends to linger a little longer and just wider pool of players who can contend. I really like Jonathan Huberdeau of the Florida Panthers at plus 2,000. That has him tied for six by the odds. That's good value. This is a Florida Panthers team playing well in contention in the Central Division, and he's a big reason why. And, you know, in the NHL versus NBA, you see a lot more of the, you know, true definition of MVP when it not just the best player overall. Jonathan Huberdeau, a big piece of a team that's overachieving a little bit. Beyond him, Sebastian Aho of the Carolina Hurricanes, plus 3,500. You know, that's a team there right in the thick of the Stanley Cup hunt as well. He gets a lot of the credit there. And then Braden Point, plus 4,000. This is a guy, reigning Stanley Cup champion, Tampa Bay Lightning. They're without Nikita Kucherov all regular season long. Their leading point getter from last year and their best player from the last two or three years. So Braden Point stepping up there. Him along with Steven Stamkos. Stamkos is plus 3,500, but Braden Point's the one who's shouldered a lot of that Kucherov absence and is just having a great season in Tampa Bay.
Does Connor McDavid get cannibalized? Hart Memorial Trophy winner odds, do they get cannibalized a little bit by his teammate who is also having a great year?
Yeah, that and the Oilers just doing the exact same thing we've seen them do year over year, and that's be able to put up points and score goals. But you're not scaring me come playoff time. And, a lot of that blame deservedly goes on defense and goaltending. But at some point it needs to fall on McDavid and Dreisaitl as well, and Dreisaitl, the reigning Hart Trophy winner. So yeah, that does also eat into McDavid, and it should have eaten into Dreisaitl last year. It didn't just because his numbers were so great. But yeah, I'm staying away from both of those players. Unless they somehow go on some sort of crazy scoring surge and they make themselves the two front runners. But I don't see that happening this year. And yeah, in the media and just in fan conversation, they're taking a lot more blame than they have these past few years in the continuous Edmonton Oilers struggles.
Outside of the Art Ross Trophy, which is the highest point score in the NHL, that's correct, right?
Yep.
And Connor McDavid is out in front by, he has 45 points, and the next closest player is Patrick Kane at 38. So a pretty comfortable lead, actually. What do you think is like the biggest lock outside of Art Ross Trophy, in terms of like, in the futures, like who do you think, is probably the best favorite, I guess is probably what I'm trying to ask.
Yeah. Okay. So obviously injuries could play a toll here, play a role, but excluding injuries, the next biggest lock for an NHL award for me is Andrei Vasilevskiy, goaltender of the Tampa Bay Lightning, for the Vezina Trophy as a top goaltender, plus 120. This guy, he plays almost every game, and he plays them all well. He has a great team in front of him, and he's a phenomenal netminder as well. He's already won a Vezina Trophy in his career, won a Stanley Cup, and Tampa Bay just continues to be not quite a front runner, but they're bouncing around between the top two, top three in the odds race for the Stanley Cup. Vasilevskiy's a big reason why. And yeah, I don't see Tampa Bay having a late season collapse by any means, and him neither. So yeah, if he doesn't get hurt, if he stays in there in that, he's going to play every game and he's going to put up the same numbers he has all year long.
Do you have like a team who you've been most disappointed in through the first half of the season?
That's a good question. Let me look at the futures odds here.
Yeah, like how do you look at that? Is it just by judging or just looking at the preseason future odds and, you know, who the highest favorite is with the lowest record? Or is it like, are you looking at puck line records?
So I'm going to give you the obvious answer just off of, you know, style of play, and that's going to be the Buffalo Sabres. You know, a lot of people had them as sort of a sleeper long shot. No, maybe not for the Stanley Cup, but at least for a playoff team that could make noise. You know, they're obviously not doing that. They're an absolute mess. You know, they signed Taylor Hall this offseason. That's not working out well. Jack Eichel's hurt now. Not that that really matters. This team's going nowhere. Jeff Skinner's been a healthy scratch most of the year. Buffalo Sabres, hands down, most disappointing. Record-wise, maybe the Stars, especially this last 10-game stretch. But again, I'm not too concerned, and I think plus 5,000, the value looks good there. Pittsburgh Penguins, maybe plus 2,500, a little bit disappointing. A big part of that was goaltender Tristan Jarry to start the season. He is rounding into form a little bit now, so that plus 2,500 isn't looking too bad. It's a team obviously still led by Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin. They can carry a lot of teams pretty far. They do it year over year. Jarry starting to look like a guy the Penguins thought he was from last season. That's why they chose him over Matt Murray. I don't really trust him come playoff time, which would be a problem, I guess. But yeah, I think they're going to be in contention at least for the playoffs.
All right. Is there been like a team that's positively surprised you?
The Panthers, I think. I was high on them, but probably not this high, at least looking at that Central Division, how tough that is. Obviously, the Lightning are the best team, the cream of the crop, and they're not running away with it. And that's largely because the Flyers are just nipping at their heels still. The Panthers. And yeah, the Stars are also in that Central Division, so you got to worry about that late season surge as well. But yeah, I think the Panthers are the biggest surprise for sure.
All right, good stuff. Do you have any other NHL thoughts or an actionable intel you'd like to give the listeners?
No, that's good. Bet the Panthers and bet the Stars. Put a little sprinkle on the Stars. You don't need to bet much to get a big payday come the summer.
All right, and be sure to check out all of Eston's handicaps on sportsbookwire.usatoday.com. We have a bunch of good writers over there that are taking their shots and breaking down the NHL game slate. Day in, day out. So be sure to check that out. And you heard Eston reference BetMGM's odds a couple of times. Well, that's because BetMGM is our primary sports book that we follow because they're our sponsor. They're operational in 10 states, and they have an awesome user-friendly mobile app. So if you're listening out there in Colorado, New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Iowa, Tennessee, Nevada, Michigan, and Virginia, please be sure to check out BetMGM. They have a whole bunch of incentives and promotional bonuses to get you ramped up and get you into their book and gambling with them. So the NBA All-Star Game was this weekend. So we're turning the page here in the NBA season, going to the second half. And I have two fade teams and two follow teams in each conference. I was going to talk a little bit about the futures, but there really isn't any futures worth betting. The MVP award, Joel Embiid's a favorite at plus 200. We gave that out earlier this season at plus 550. Also, wouldn't hate James Harden, who I think is still overvalued or undervalued, excuse me, at plus 1600. But truthfully, I didn't take that to the window, nor will I. Rookie of the Year is all but over with LaMelo Ball. Defensive Player of the Year, I don't hate Ben Simmons, who's the second favorite at plus 275. It's just not enough value for me. I think Rudy Gobert being the preeminent defensive big in the league and on a team that isn't going to get really any other individual award love outside of the obvious one, which is Rudy Gobert, it'd be tough for Ben Simmons to jump him. But I am interested in that. I just wish there was some more value. Most improved player, I gave that out last week for Julius Randle at 7-1. It's up to +500. I wouldn't give it out at +500. I'm stick with the 7-1 ticket. Hopefully you guys followed me on that and were able to get the Julius Randle odds to win most improved player before they went up. And it's pretty much the same thing or thought process when you go through each of the divisions. I don't see any value here. Even the Miami Heat, which are the division leaders of the Southeast Division, which is a pretty bad division, that's accounted for in the line because Heat, despite only being 500, they are -250 to win that division. They're playing really well, and they're a team that we'll talk about in a little while here. But the first fade team in the Eastern Conference, or the only fade team in the Eastern Conference, it's pretty simple. It's going to be the Orlando Magic. They have the third toughest remaining schedule according to Tankathon.com, and they're 9-5 overall against bottom 10 teams in terms of net points per possession, and they're 4-18 versus the other 20 teams. They actually do play all right against really bad teams, but they get absolutely smoked against good teams, and that's a problem if you have the third toughest remaining schedule. They've had the 27th ranked schedule, strength of schedule to date, but they have the worst ATS margin, and they're 6th in expected win differential based on net efficiency, according to cleaningtheglass.com. Essentially, what that means is their record is better than their underlining stats. They're missing three starters, at least, with Jonathan Isaac, Markelle Fultz, both of which are out for the season, Aaron Gordon, who's been banged up the whole year and has been out for at least the last month. I'm not sure when he's going to come back. Evan Fournier, who's a really good shooting guard for them, has been in and out of the lineup. And their only all-star, Vucevic, is reportedly on the trade block. And, you know, Orlando is going to be looking towards the rebuild pretty shortly here. And I think they're going to want to dump Vucevic or whatever assets they could get. Again, it's not, you know, it's not that sharp, I would say, or that hidden of a take, but Orlando Magic, I'm definitely looking to bet against when they're playing good teams, and I'm willing to lay big numbers in doing so. And on the West, the team that I would be fading as the favorite to win the NBA Finals, at least out of the West, would be the Los Angeles Lakers, defending champion. They have the 7th toughest remaining schedule, according to Tankathon, but they're in the toughest division as well. They're only 1-4 in the Pacific Division, or against division foes, and 5 of their 7 remaining division games are on the road. They limped into the All-Star break, and Anthony Davis should be shelved until at least April Fool's Day. I can't imagine he'd play before that. I'd actually be kind of surprised if he played much before, like a week prior to the playoffs. I guess we'll see on that. And aside from Dennis Schroeder, none of their offseason acquisitions have made an impact. Marc Gasol was anticipated to be an upgrade, but he hasn't been at all, especially defensively. And his shooting just hasn't been good enough to make up for the downgrade in defense at the position when they went from JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard to Marc Gasol this offseason. Also, I think people have forgotten because of how, you know, the Lakers won the championship, but before the start of the postseason, the bubble, their offensive efficiency or lack thereof was one of the big talking points in the NBA circles. Last season, post All-Star break, they had the third worst spread differential or ATS margin and the second lowest offensive points per possession, according to cleaningtheglass.com. They've been really struggling without Anthony Davis, and it's been mostly offense, actually. They still compete defensively and have smart, you know, have smart guys who aren't trying to let the Lakers sink or fall too much in the standings without Anthony Davis. You know, they all have pride, as they should, and LeBron James is an all-time great. But that being said, you know, their 7th toughest schedule, toughest division. I'm going to be looking to play against the Lakers when they're going against good teams. And two teams that I would follow or be betting on, Again, East isn't that tricky in my opinion. I'm on the Miami Heat. They're starting to play like the team we expected them to play now that they're fully healthy, or they're playing and they are playing with the form we expected them to have heading into the season. And their last eight, they're 7-1 with the fifth best defensive points per possession. They have the fourth easiest schedule remaining according to Tankathon, and they have by far the softest division. They are the only team that is 500 in the Southeast Division at 18-18. I just said that, just mentioned it. So again, that's the only team, that's the only division leader that's 500 or I guess below. Every other division leader is above 500 is what I'm saying. And with Atlanta Hawks wing DeAndre Hunter out, there's no above average five-man lineups within the division. Miami has looked much better with Goran Dragic in. Dragic is fourth in Miami in on-off-court net rating. And since he returned to the lineup 5 games ago, the Heat are fifth in clutch net rating. And they've played 4 games that are considered clutch situations, and they're 4-0 have won all 4-0. They're fourth in free throw rate, so that tells me that teams are scrambling against their offense. They're not really knocking down shots right now, but they're going to start knocking them down, and they're getting to the free throw line at an incredible rate. So their defense really has been carrying them, and I think the offense is going to get a lot better in the second half. So that's a team that I'm looking to play on. And in the West, Denver Nuggets. They have the fifth easiest remaining schedule, according to Tankathon, and they have the third worst win differential according to Cleaning the Glass. And what that means essentially is that their record is worse than what their numbers suggest. So they should have roughly 2 more wins. They're starting to hit their stride. They're 6-2 in the past 2 weeks leading up to the All-Star break. They have the third highest points per possession over that span and the fourth best ATS margin. And a big reason is because of Jamal Murray breaking out of his slump and the maturation of Michael Porter Jr. Nikola Jokic is, let me see what his MVP odds is right now. He is third, and he has not taken a step back at all. He's been balling, but Jamal Murray has looked great lately. He's averaging 29 points per game over the last 8 on 59% shooting, 51% from 3, 94% from the free throw line. I don't know if you've heard them commenting or I guess knocking, criticizing Denver's earlier performance in the season, Essen. But the big reason was because of Jamal Murray. It's just they were waiting on bubble Jamal Murray. So he's finally here. And they're getting healthier, the Denver Nuggets. But the injuries that they have sustained have allowed Michael Porter Jr. to step up and find a role. He is a part of 2 90-plus percentile five-man lineups on Denver. And in the last 8 games, he's averaging 17 points per game on 56% shooting, 51% from 3, and 9 rebounds per game. He's crashing the offensive glass. He's a perfect catch-and-shoot player, and he's really he's really not knocking down some open shots, which is perfect with Jamal Murray being able to get anywhere he wants and make a ton of crazy shots. And then, you know, Nikola Jokic just opening everything up. So in conclusion, I'm fading the Orlando Magic and the East and the Los Angeles Lakers in the West. And I'm following or betting on the Miami Heat and the Denver Nuggets in the second half of the seasons. Do you have any thoughts about any of that? I just kind of rambled for like 10 minutes straight.
Yeah, no, that was good. Just a question for you, really, more than a follow-up. But you mentioned the Wizards, the Magic and Nikola Vucevic being up for grabs at the trade deadline, perhaps. Any other, you know, not buyer or not sellers, but buyers that intrigue you potentially heading towards the deadline who, you know, could look to add a player like Vucevic? You know, Raptors point guard Kyle Lowry has been bandied about in rumors as well. Any potential destinations you're eyeing for those two or other big names that could make a charge up either the Eastern or the Western Conference.
Yeah, the one that Vucevic, the team that he's most, rumored to be interested in him would be the Boston Celtics. That makes a lot of sense. They need more of an interior presence, at least offensively. Daniel Tice is a pretty good role player, backup big. Tristan Thompson, for what he does, rebounding is really good. But Vucevic, according to a lot of Boston insiders, is someone that would fit well into the team, and that's something that I actually believe. I think he would add a much needed interior presence. Yeah, you mentioned Kyle Lowry. I don't know. I'm going to talk about them in a second here. The Raptors, they're a part of one of my three best bets. Spoiler, I'm actually going to bet against them. The whole thing with the Raptors is a little weird to me. If I'm a Raptors like fan, or even just like, in the front office, I would want to keep him as he was on the title team. I would want him to retire on the Raptors, but that's just my opinion. It's almost like a fan thing that I have in my head that's a thinking that I follow. I just want to root for my guys, and I would hate to see Kyle Lowry move on. But
what he can bring you to carry you through this sort of soft rebuild that Toronto's going to go through the next 2-3 seasons, perhaps. That's probably worth more than what he would fetch you in a trade at this point, right? Like, he's not a guy who's going to get you a first this year and three future firsts, right? Like,
oh no,
maybe a first this year and then, a fringe bench player. So yeah, I don't think that's going to help the Raptors that much. I think you want Kyle Lowry's veteran leadership and what he can bring, and perhaps the bench role. That would be worth more to you than whatever trade package a team like the Philadelphia 76ers could give you.
Right. And like another team that he's been linked to or is reportedly interested in him would be the Denver Nuggets, right? And some people might hear that and think like, oh, Michael Porter Jr. If the Nuggets traded Michael Porter Jr. for Kyle Lowry, that would be absurd. I don't even believe that's a thing. So what we're talking about is PJ Dozier and whatever Denver's first round pick is next season. Do you think Toronto wants that? I couldn't imagine.
And this isn't the Raptors team that traded Vince Carter, right? There are some smart people running the Toronto Raptors right now, and they realize what Kyle Lowry means, not only to the value of the team on the floor, but just to the value of the franchise as a whole. And he's well surpassed Vince Carter, Chris Bosh as the most beloved player in Raptors history at this point.
Yeah, and I'm looking at teams, like I'm looking for teams that could use an upgrade or would be in the market for upgrading. And I just don't, like, the Lakers need some help, but they don't have anything to trade. Like, if anything, they're looking to acquire Andre Drummond in the buyout market. Dallas Mavericks could make a move, but they would be dangling Kristaps Porzingis, and Kristaps Porzingis for Vucevic. I don't hate that if I'm a Mavericks fan. Honestly, I don't know if the Mavericks take that, because that's tying up a lot of money into an injured guy, and that's kind of like the opposite direction of the Magic want to go. And Kyle Lowry and Luka Doncic next to each other make zero sense. So I'm looking at, like, you kind of spring that one up on me, and I like it. I'm just trying to see which teams actually have assets to move and are in a position to send those assets away or move those guys. And I guess Boston is the only team that I could really come up with. But again, it's mostly just because of things that I hear or read, and people suggesting that Boston's going to be in that market. There is a bit of it with Vucevic where it's just like, really, the Magic should just be looking to dump him and rebuild at all costs. And the Raptors and Kyle Lowry really aren't in that situation, even though the trade rumors are puzzling to me for him. But whatever. Do you have any other thoughts or questions?
No, that's good. And yeah, the Celtics were a team I was thinking of as well. Obviously, Boston always looking to contend. +3,000 by the odds there. That's decent value, I suppose, even though they haven't been that impressive and they're stuck in the same division as the 76ers. You know, plenty of experience on that Celtics roster anyway. So, yeah, they could contend there, I think. The Knicks, you know, they're going to want to add at the trade deadline in playoff contention for the first time in what feels like forever. And, you know, they're actually fun to watch and a good team. I don't think they're worth much of a shot at plus 25,000, though, do you?
For what? For the fine to win the championship?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
That's probably
no,
too much. No. But, like, even the any interest in the Eastern Conference bet for a Knicks team that, you know, could add a couple of pieces at the deadline, even?
No.
Plus 15,000 Eastern Conference, yeah.
No, I mean, I don't know. That's the NBA futures market. It's very rare that a sleeper or a team that's like outside of the favorites makes it. You do have the Miami Heat last year, and I was pretty long on them. If you remember, I took them to beat the Bucks at I think plus 2,000 in that series, and I bet them against the Celtics as well. I made a lot of money actually last year off of Miami, but it was a very particular situation. I guess there's value in the Celtics, but I wouldn't go as far down as the Knicks. I mean, they don't have a guy, a wing, that can create his own bucket against the top teams in the East. And especially against like Philly. I think there's value in Philly in the Eastern Conference at plus 500. A little bit of value, but I don't think I would bet it. Again, I don't really have any futures to go off of. So, good stuff, right, though. Players Championships is this weekend. It's at the Players Stadium course in Ponte Vedra Beach. Did I say that right?
Yeah, Ponte Vedra Beach, I think.
Beach. All right, cool. Par 72. Yeah. What do you got on this?
Yeah, right in the PGA Tour headquarters. Par 72, TPC Sawgrass. Just under 7,200 yards, Bermuda greens, a whole lot of water. That's very much in play on 12 to 15 holes. So, yeah, that's part of what makes this tournament exciting each and every year. The Iowan Green 17th obviously gets a lot of attention, but you know, so many other areas on this course where you can put up a big score in a hurry. So, you know, one of the key stats for me this week is bogey avoidance. All but one winner since, I think, 2008 has finished at 10 below par or better. Sergio Garcia was the only one who didn't at minus five, and that was 2008. Yes, correct. Scoring opportunities are there. What you need to be more focused on is avoiding the trouble scores and, you know, just anything that can play you out of this tournament. Also looking at driving accuracy, that's much more important this week than driving distance. So Bryson DeChambeau, Arnold Palmer Invitational winner, is a fade once again for me. And you know what? That's going to be the story with Bryson DeChambeau for what seems like the next several years. Is, you know, you either go all in on him or you have to fade him completely. And you know, this to me is a course where you fade Bryson DeChambeau. He's not going to have those lines that he took last week that gave him the great advantage off the tee. He's going to have to, you know, use his irons more off the tee and carefully place his tee shots. That's been his one weakness. If you want to, or if you dare say that Bryson DeChambeau has a weakness, that's it. So I don't see this course being a great fit. He hasn't been, you know, super great here before in a couple of other previous spots. Obviously this tournament canceled after round one last year due to the COVID-19 pandemic. So Rory McIlroy is defending his 2019 title. And yeah, we saw Rory McIlroy last week, and that was just a repeat of what we've seen from Rory McIlroy for the last year. He came out great start round one, a course that he should have played well. He did for 18 holes. And, you know, then it just fades. It's mental with him at this point, absolutely. And he's one of, if not the most talented golfer on the planet. And it's very strange to see. And, you know, he's certainly got more wins up his sleeve later in his career. But, you know, for me personally, I'm off the betting Rory wagon. And, you know, if that's going to come and bite me this week or any other week, I'm just going to have to live with that at this point. I've sunk too much money into chasing ghosts at this point. So anyway, Dustin Johnson, John Rahm, Xander Schauffele, they're all back in the mix this week. And hey, all three of them could win this week. This is one of the strongest fields in golf each and every year. You know, name your favorite golfer. He's got a chance to win. But, you know, looking for value and long shots, Webb Simpson at plus 2,200 is a great value pick for me this week. He checks boxes in driving accuracy, par five scoring, and bogey avoidance. He won twice last year. He has a couple top tens already this year, and he won here in 2018. You know, there's never been a repeat winner and very few two-time winners. Actually, Tiger Woods is the most recent to get a second victory here, but Webb Simpson, I think, you know, this course, it's known for not being overly conducive to any one brand of golfer. That's fine for me with Webb Simpson, who doesn't really have a niche. He's just an all-around good ball striker. He can get hot with the putter, and he's got a good short game, and he just hits it where he's supposed to, and he knows this course well. I like him at plus 2,200. He's my favorite play of the week. After that, we got Cameron Smith at, odds have been moving here a little bit for him. As of this podcast, lost Cameron Smith, plus 6,000. That's okay for me. I like that. And then Jason Kokrak at plus 7,000. I like both of these guys. Jason Kokrak, a great putter on Bermuda grass greens. He had another top 10 finish last week in this Florida swing, coming off the top 10 at the WGC Workday Championship. Cameron Smith, he's been playing well, and he tied for 56th here in 2019. I'm not worried about that. He's a brand new golfer than he was that year. He got his first PGA Tour win in 2020 in Hawaii. I like him a lot, and he's tied with DeChambeau in par five scoring, actually. And he's not doing it with the distance that DeChambeau does it. Smith's just doing it with good iron play and good putting, and playing the way that people say it should be played. So more reliable, a little more trustworthy, Cameron Smith for me this week at this venue. I like those three guys. Those are my top three picks: Webb Simpson, Jason Kokrak, Cameron Smith.
Do you have any other players' championship handicaps or articles that are going to be published here in the next day or two before the opening or the tee off?
Yeah. So I have four pieces up on sportsreport.com as of now, Tuesday evening. I have my outright picks of my fantasy golf power rankings. I have five long shots to target. And then I did something new this week. I did one bet for each of the favorites, and that's purely because of the strength of field here. Brooks Koepka withdrew due to a knee injury. He's probably the only guy that everybody knows who isn't here this week. So I went through the top nine betting favorites, everyone under 2,500 to 1. So Dustin Johnson, he's plus 1,200 to win. I don't want to bet that. Nobody wants to bet that, especially in this field. You can get him top 10 finish plus 140. Give me plus money with that kind of cushion. I love that. Bryson DeChambeau to miss the cut, plus 225. John Rahm, top continental European, plus 175. So the point of this article, check it out on sportsrequire.com. Everyone, or a lot of these guys, like these guys, if you follow golf, chances are one of these nine guys is your favorite golfer. Who doesn't want to follow their guy, make a little bit of money off of them? So that's what the theme of this article was. It was just kind of how to get a plus money return off of these guys when their odds to win outright aren't very appealing.
Yeah, I like that. I like how you have like a different like market or different like, market odds or price for each golfer, and a lot of names that I actually knew. And I don't know a lot about golf. Yeah, when I was reading a little bit about the player championship, a few like pieces that I read pretty much alleged, or not alleged, but insinuated that this is one of the more random courses on the tour. And it's tough to like handicap it from years prior. Why is that?
That's the design, and that's the water. And the closer you are to contention, the more you want to take those risks, and that's when the water bites you, whether it be on 17 or 18 with water running down the side as well. It's a fantastic finishing stretch of golf. And, you know, the competitiveness of the field, you know, forces all these top guys to take chances they otherwise wouldn't. And you know, they became, a lot of them become top guys by not falling victim to those risks that other guys take. You know, the, in this tournament, they can't play it as safe as they usually do. So, you know, a double or a triple is very possible on Sunday. And, you know, we see the leaderboard almost get overhauled each and every year.
What's like the live lines or mid-tournament market like for betting golf? Like if you see Bryson DeChambeau has it going in the first round and like you were saying, he's got a high ceiling, low floor for the way he plays, especially at this course. Is there a way that you can profit off of that mid-tournament?
With DeChambeau, what you would want in that case is a bad start because he's a guy who can make up a whole lot of strokes quickly by going for greens in two or driving par fours. He can put himself in eagle situations. So yeah, if you're going to live bet a guy like DeChambeau, you're hoping for a bad start because the thing with him is he's so smart as well that if he does start strong, he's going to, you know, reserve himself and stop taking the chances. And he can protect a lead. We saw it at the U.S. Open last year at Wingfoot. And that's a course where big scores were very powerful on pretty much every hole as well. And he avoided them for 72 holes. So, yeah, that's a good point and great to bring it up. But, yeah, you can't really do much when DeChambeau has the lead. But, yeah, you know, if not following the stats directly, Data the Golf is a great site. I encourage everyone to check it out, especially for following a golf tournament live. If you're looking to place a live wager on a winner or a top five finish, even you got to be following along. Look at these strokes gain stats. See who, you know, are they getting lucky with the putter? Are they getting unlucky with the putter? Are they gaining strokes on approach, which is what you need to do at TPC Sawgrass? So if they are playing well off the tee, tee to green on approach, but their putter has been lacking through the first round, the first two rounds. If they make the cut, you know, you hope that the putter gets hot for rounds three and four, and they could be well worth a live bet at an inflated number.
All right, the Players Championship tees off this Thursday at the Player Stadium course. Be sure to circle back and check out sportsbookwire.usatoday.com, specifically Esten McLaren's handicaps, write-ups, and posts about the Players Championship. You're gonna take some of your best bets to the window too, right?
Yes, sir. That's what we're here for.
All right, great. I have a few NBA games that I want to go through. I've been doing this the past few weeks. I'm actually 6-1 in the last three episodes on my NBA best bets. I don't know if you've noticed.
You should start doing more games. Just you know, do the entire slate.
Yeah, I wish I could just forecast every one of these games. it would be like a 6-hour podcast. But yeah, 3-1, or excuse me, 6-1 in my last 3 weeks. I went 2-1 last week. Broke a 4-game winning streak. I was right about the Sixers over the Jazz. I hit the money line on that one too. I took the Nuggets over the Pacers. I knew they were going to be laying at least 4 on the road. I think it finished at 5, and they won pretty handedly. And I lost with the Warriors versus the Blazers. It was Dame time late. He had clutch shots, and it was a good game, but wasn't able to cash that one for us guys and girls. So sorry about that, but still a winning week if you took all my picks. And let's try to keep that good momentum going into this week. The first game that I'm looking at is the first game in the second half of the season. It's going to be the Grizzlies -1.5 versus the Wizards. I would take the Grizzlies up to -3.5 actually. The Grizzlies rolled them last week, recording Tuesday, March 9th. They played Tuesday, March 2nd. So just 8 days later, they're going to play again. Wizards were playing really well entering the All-Star break. So it wasn't like the Memphis caught them at a bad time. Wizards had a higher effective field goal shooting and a higher free throw to field goal rate in that game. Yet The Grizzlies had double the offensive rebounding rate and half of the turnover rate, which is going to continue again Wednesday. Memphis is first in defensive turnover rate and sixth in offensive rebounding rate. Russell Westbrook had 8 turnovers in that game Tuesday. And again, with an aggressive backcourt, defensive backcourt like the Grizzlies have, and knowing Russell Westbrook's turnover-heavy style of play and profile, I don't see how they're not going to be turning the ball over again. That's why I also kind of lean to the over in this one. The Grizzlies shoot the second highest volume of mid-range shots. Washington has the worst defensive mid-range field goal percentage. Grizzlies also crush bottom 10 defenses. Washington's defense is ranked 26th in defensive points per possession. In games against bottom 10 defenses, the Grizzlies are 8-4 overall with the third best ATS margin and the eighth best net efficiency. And these styles, you know how they say styles make fights? Well, the styles of these two fighters do not match up well for Washington. Like I said, Grizzlies offensive rebound the ball at the sixth highest rate, and they force the most defensive turnovers or the highest defensive turnover rate. They also are top 5 in the miscellaneous categories, such as points off turnover, second chance points per game, fast break points per game, and paint points per game. They're just a high energy hustle team. This is where Washington struggles. They're bottom 5 in opponents' points off of turnovers, which again, huge problem if the team you're playing is first and they create the most turnovers, and their bottom 5 in second chance points per game allowed. And again, another thing that Memphis excels at, and it's because of their high offensive rebounding rate. So I would play the Grizzlies up to 3.5. Again, they crushed them by 14 the first one, which is a snoozer, and it was in Washington. I think it looks pretty similar. The second game that I like, the Atlanta Hawks, I think it's going to be plus 5. I would play it down to plus 2.5, and they're at the Toronto Raptors. Of course, it's going to be in Tampa, Florida. It's Thursday, March 11th, and we talked about this earlier. I'm just kind of concerned with the vibe of the Raptors. I understand they're like, they got to be really disappointed with their whole situation, playing in Tampa, being below 500, coming off a championship a couple years ago. They looked great last season. And Kyle Lowry's telling people he's getting traded. I don't know how much truth there is to that. I don't think he's lying, though. And maybe they're looking to get him to a contender and kind of help him out. Again, it's not something that I agree with, but it just kind of goes in line with the whole a concern that I have with, you know, how the Toronto Raptors are going to finish this season. I know they have to be disappointed in how they played, and I just don't think they're coming back from the All-Star break excited to be playing basketball in their current situation. It was supposed to be a step-up year for the Atlanta young the young Atlanta building blocks, and it's been a disappointing start to the season. They started out pretty good, but they've fallen off here since February. None of them made the All-Star game, which was just in Atlanta, so I'm expecting a motivated Hawks team, which just fired their coach, to kind of rearrange things and to come out of the All-Star break looking to contend for at least the play-in in the Eastern Conference. The Hawks broke a 10-game losing streak to the Raptors. Last time they played on February 6th, they beat them 132-121. But it was Atlanta's third time covering in the last 4 games against the Raptors. So they are winning or cashing tickets against the spread against the Raptors, even though they did lose 10 in a row. They shot 70% effective field goal percentage and 39% free throw to field goal rate in the first game against the Raptors. Comparatively speaking, Toronto shot 49%, or had 49% effective field goal shooting and 27% free throw attempt rate. And that's a thing that's just going to be an issue with this matchup for the Raptors. Trae Young has balled in his last 4 games against the Raptors, and Toronto is last in defensive free throw to field goal rate, which means he's in good shape to have another great game. Trae Young, he's in the top 10 in free throw attempts in the NBA. Atlanta's got the second highest free throw attempt rate as a team. Trae Young has averaged 29.5 points per game with 11.8 free throw attempts and 12.8 assists per game in those last four games against Toronto. Again, Atlanta won the last one and they covered the last three. I'm anticipating it's going to be at 4.5. I would play it up to or down to 2.5 for the Atlanta Hawks. Any thoughts, any pushback, anything that has sparked your interest or my
No, definitely in agreement with you on the Hawks over Raptors pick. And you know, I'm writing that piece for sportsbookwire.com on Thursday, so you'll be getting a shutout in there. You did a lot of the heavy lifting for me with that take. And yeah, in full agreement.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising, but the Atlanta Hawks have the third best three-point defense. And really, the only thing that Toronto's tried to do with any success this season, it would appear, is just shoot and chuck three-pointers. They have the ninth best three-point shooting percentage, but again, like the Hawks are actually really well like positioned and built to defend what the Raptors want to do. So, and again, I love Fred VanVleet, but he is in the one percentile or the bottom of guards in terms of defensive free throw rate. He commits a lot of fouls, which is the biggest issue. Like the first thing you have to look at handicapping when you're looking at an Atlanta Hawks game because of Trae Young. Hey,
he's just trying to play a little bit too much like Kyle Lowry, except he just ain't getting those calls.
Yeah, he's young. It'll come to him maybe next year or the year after.
He's got the right teacher. But yeah, no, if you look back through the Raptors' losses, most of them have come against teams that can play above average three-point defense because that's all that team is looking to do, which is just so strange. I know, obviously, a lot of personnel turnover, but that's just such a drastic change from that 2018-19 NBA championship team. Just purely relying on three-pointers this year, and it's just not as fun to watch.
No, and it's just that's the big thing of like why Kyle Lowry is reportedly being shopped around. And we talked about this off recording like weeks ago, and I said to you like that doesn't look like Kyle Lowry fits what they want to do. It was my idea to put him on the bench and have him run the second unit because again, like he could still like provide a whole bunch of value and be an awesome like role player and definitely like feast on other teams' second units, and I would want him on my team for a playoff run. But I've been kind of long on this whole Kyle Lowry doesn't fit what you guys are doing thing, so like the Hawks here.
Well, we'll see you in the coming weeks, I guess.
Yeah. And the third game, again, this is a team that I'm following here in the second half of the schedule, and that's the Miami Heat. Miami Heat are visiting the Chicago Bulls Friday, March 12th. Both teams are really clumsy, or at least it would appear so on their stats. The Heat are last in turnover percentage. The Bulls are 28th in turnover percentage, but Miami's really gotten it together since Goran Dragic returned back to the lineup, which was 5 games ago. In the last 5 games, the Heat are allowing the fewest points off of turnovers per game, so they aren't turning the ball over as much. And if they do, they obviously aren't getting punished by opponents as much. And they're 9th in scoring points off of and offensive points off of turnovers, which is a huge issue for the Chicago Bulls, who are giving up the most points off of turnovers per game. They're also 10th in assist to turnover ratio with Dragic back in the line, you know, because he keeps things organized and he brings a lot to Miami's game plan in terms of being able to handle the ball, get other shooters open, be able to get to the free throw line at a really high rate, especially if the offense is struggling. They need to get easy points, and he spaces the floor with his shooting. Miami's fourth in free throw attempt rate, while Chicago is 25th in defensive free throw attempt rate. This is according to cleaningtheglass.com, which removes all garbage time stats. Jimmy Butler has outscored Zach LaVine in six of their seven head-to-head matchups. They're averaging 25 to 21 points per game. Again, Jimmy Butler is leading him. And he's averaging 11.3 free throw attempts per game in those head-to-head meetings. So this kind of goes in line with Miami's fourth highest free throw attempt rate and then Chicago's sixth lowest defensive free throw attempt rate, which is just a huge matchup edge for Miami in this one. And I also think there's motivation for Miami, considering they're not in the they're leading the Southeast Division. But you know they got to be a little disappointed that they're only 500 with more than half the games played in the season. Also, Jimmy Butler was not selected the All-Star game. It wasn't really a snub. He was injured, you know. But, you know, he's going to be motivated by that, and he's going to be a little motivated to play his former team. And I love the matchup here. So I would play the Heat up to I would really hate to lay 6.5 on the road. I would go up to that. I think it'll open at Heat minus 4.5 at the Chicago Bulls. And I'll bring those up again in our next segment, which is going to the window. You ready to go to the window?
Let's do it.
The Bet Slippin' Podcast. Going to the window.
This is where we lock in our best bets for the week or the upcoming sports slate. What do you got going on with your bet slip?
So a couple of the rehash here. I like the Dallas Stars plus 5,000 for the Stanley Cup. Definitely some value there. I like Jonathan Huberdeau plus 2,000 for the NHL's Hart Trophy as MVP. And I like Webb Simpson at plus 2,200 to win the Players' Championship this week. One more surprise pick here. Players' Championship again. Everyone loves a long shot. Henrik Stenson, plus 22,500. This guy's a major winner. He is a Players' Championship winner. You know, that was a long time ago. But, you know, he's still a great golfer. And he shook off. He played his first PGA Tour event of 2021 last week at Bay Hill. He missed the cut. Now that's a much tougher course for him, especially for your first event of the year, at least in North America. So I think he shook off a little bit of rust. He's back at a course where he's won before, has played well before. I like Henrik Stenson at plus 22,500. That number is just disrespectful, and I'm not here to stand for it.
All right. I just gave you guys my picks, but I'll do another one. I'll regurgitate them here. I got the Grizzlies. It's right now it's at minus 1.5 on BetMGM. They've already got the odds up. So all of our listeners, once again, in Colorado, New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Iowa, Tennessee, Nevada, Michigan, Virginia, please be sure to check out BetMGM Sportsbook. I'm going to take the Hawks. And I think it's going to be 4.5. I would be willing to play it down to 2.5 at Toronto in Tampa. And I got the Heat minus 4.5. Want to play it up to 6.5 in Chicago. That's what I got for my bet slip. Wish I had some futures for you guys and gals, but I don't. So what else do you have, or is that dude for this episode?
No, that's good for me. Let's leave it at just the winners, and let's not push our luck.
Right on. Yeah, I'm 6-1 in best bets. You have some positive regression, as they call it in the sports gambling industry, due here for the player championship. We're going to rebound off of last week.
I was on a little bit of a heater in the PGA or on the PGA Tour, so you know, hit my speed bump last week, a little bit of a heat check, but you know, right back at it this week. I feel good.
Also, just to put it out there for future episodes, kind of put it in your head now. We're going to be talking about March Madness next week, and then we'll be talking about the MLB 2021 season, previewing our best bets and the futures that we like for the baseball season. We've got Masters and NFL draft coverage coming up in future weeks as well. Obviously, the NBA is in full swing, so I'll be talking about the NBA every week, and whatever stories that have a gambling component to them, we'll be covering here on the Bet Slippin' Podcast, presented by Sportsbook Wire. Thanks to everyone that are that is streaming. Please leave us a positive review wherever you can on these podcast platforms. I know we're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. So wherever you get your podcasts, and if you could leave us a nice review, nice rating, that would really help us grow the chart, rise in the charts. Best of luck on all your bets this week. And until next time, later.
You've been listening to the Bet Slippin' Podcast with Jeff Clark and Esten McLaren from USA Today Sportsbook Wire. Listen and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.